InvestTalk is brought to you today by Health IQ. People who work out and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. That's the whole idea behind Health IQ. If you're a Health IQ customer, you could save up to 33% on your life insurance premium. How do you find out more about it? To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/invest or mention the promo code INVEST when you talk to a Health IQ agent. This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our April 18th, 2018 edition of Invest Talk. And our goal, as always, is to help you find some financial independence, and that is defined in many different ways for many different people. But ultimately, the main definition is to enjoy the options that you have in life, meaning doing what you want to do as opposed to what you have to do. Now, getting there requires some planning as well as some discipline. And frankly, discipline is the hardest part, not only from a savings perspective, but an investment perspective as well. And Steve and I are here to walk with you and help you make the decisions based on good information and good principles. So I hope to hear from you this hour. As always, we are open to any money questions. Our live line is open right now from 4 to 5 Pacific time, just like it is each and every weekday. 888-99-CHART is the number. Now, for most working people, their 401ks are their primary ways to save money. And in most 401k plans, the sole investment vehicle available to participants are mutual funds. Right? It's just a list of mutual funds. And it's a challenge to really pick quality mutual funds from that fund list. Most people just look at what happened last year or the last few years and kind of go based on that. And history, if history is any guide, that's a terrible way to be picking funds. And then there's the question of, is the mix of funds right for you and your goals and your personal risk tolerance? You know, many people flee, not just in their brokerage account, but in their 401k account as well. They flee the markets when things get rough. And then when things do great, they chase performance. Like I said, they look at the last year, few years, and they allocate that way. So what formulas are you using to compare funds? There are some metrics to use, and I'll give you a rundown in just a moment. Now, but first, let's get to work answering questions that you have brought forward to us between programs. I'm open to any money questions at 888-99-CHART. It is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Junior in Indianapolis. Thanks again for the great program. My question is about how you approach investing in new sectors, in this case, the cannabis industry. Unless some big medical bombshell comes out saying the stuff causes cancer or something like that, whether it's a couple years or 20 years away, cannabis should be legal coast to coast, I think. There's going to be a lot of money to be made. Do you look for big companies to invest in, say, ConAgra, Merck, or Procter & Gamble, and or do you invest in smaller, well-run companies that are profitable? Do you maybe short sectors that are committed to competing with the cannabis industry? I suppose my question could apply to any new sector like virtual reality. I would love any thoughts, and thanks much.
Well, this is a great question because in today's world, not only politically, things change fairly rapidly, but technology-wise, things change fairly rapidly. So there's new industries and new ideas being created almost every year. Obviously, cannabis is one that's been around for a long time, but because of the political and political changes and views that are transforming or have transformed throughout the years. Cannabis, I believe, is now legal in Canada and in many states in the union, and most experts actually expect it to be legal nationwide by 2020, I think, is the base case, and probably by 2024 at the latest. So he's right, there is definitely a thought process to how to invest in this space, and it's a space that's probably going to grow, and maybe, no pun intended, and it's probably something that is going to, it's going to be difficult to predict. There are some Canadian companies that are getting bigger, and I would look at management as well as patents, and goes for any industry. What companies might have patents for products that are going to lead the industry, whatever the industry that is. Now, obviously, cannabis, that's a kind of a difficult one to have a patent towards, but there are companies that are attempting to create competitive advantages through better technology, process, etc., when it comes to that industry. And then second is management. And this is even more difficult to really understand. It's who are the managers? What prior experience do they have? How long have they been in the industry? Are they serious? Or is this something, especially in the cannabis industry, where it's people who used to be underground, right, in the black market, and they're trying to make it legit. And most of the time, those people, because they don't have the business background, cut corners and they don't do it the right way. And so what you want to do is find leadership that is hopefully also connected in with government, because government is going to play a big part in how the industry evolves, because certainly there's going to be a lot of regulation. There already is a lot of regulation in the states where it is legal, and that's probably only going to continue for the foreseeable future, and the companies that will lead the industry will have their pulse on what those regulations are and be disciplined and know how to comply with them. So really, with any industry, it comes down to what type of patent and a technology advantage do they have in that sense, and then as well as leadership. You know, think of Jeff Bezos, you know, online retail. Amazon wasn't the first one to try it, but Bezos was a great leader in pushing that forward. So really it comes down to great leadership. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk a little bit about mutual funds, and here are a few metrics one can use to compare different funds with their peers. One is alpha, and alpha is a measurement of performance on a risk-adjusted basis. And this is the first place that you want to look to understand, not only is that mutual fund performing, and it may be making money, right? It might have been up 20% last year, right? But if it was up because it just took a lot more risk than the overall market, is that really a great performing fund? Because when the market turns south, they're going to turn south even more than the overall market, right? Because of that excess amount of risk. So what alpha takes into account is volatility compared to the index, right? So say it's 20% more volatile than the index, then it should at least be 20% higher returning than the index, right? Hopefully more. And any percent above that means a positive alpha, or alpha above one. So you're going to look for a positive alpha. Alpha above one is definitely what you want to look for. The higher the number, the better. Then there's the Sharpe ratio. And this figure is similar to alpha, but is more reliable because it measures volatility with standard deviation rather than beta. Okay, there's different ways to understand risk, but the beta is tracking the overall market, whereas standard deviation is actually understanding the volatility of that particular investment. So one is looking at volatility in relation to the market. Other is looking at volatility in and of itself. So that's important as well. And so you want that number to be as high as possible as well. Now, the turnover ratio measures how active the manager is on a yearly basis. The more active a manager is, the higher the cost as an investor, right? Commissions for those trades. And the more the performance might deviate from a major index, which could be a good thing or could be a bad thing, depending how good of a manager they are. Now, there are a few figures you need to consider to properly analyze mutual funds for your portfolio. Like I said, while most people follow just the recent performance, there are other measures that matter. You can't look at one number in a vacuum. Okay? So be aware of that. Understand that performance is always in relation to risk. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. I want to take a quick look at the market today. It was kind of a flat day. The S&P was up 2 points. NASDAQ was up 14. Dow was down 38 on the back of IBM's poor earnings. And you saw commodities do well. Oil did well. Precious metals did well. Steel names did well. It was a good day for the commodity space and really value stocks in general. We are bumping up into some resistance, but overall, the market remains choppy, and it's actually building some momentum. Is it going to break out to the upside? It's not there yet. It hasn't reached levels yet. Especially, I want to see on a weekly basis if we can break above kind of the 2750 mark on the S&P. Now we're at 2708, and I think that'll be a crucial number to see if we can break out into new highs. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. If you're going to invest in real estate, you need to be up on the local housing trends. Are home sales up or down? Listing prices, etc. Is it a buyer's market or a seller's market? How do mortgage rates affect your local market or maybe the tax changes? What are some other things to consider? We can talk about that. I am a licensed real estate consultant. Give me a call. 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now on InvestTalk.
You're listening to Invest Talk, and we're listening to you.
I just have a general question about generic drug makers.
I'm interested in your comments on closed-end bond funds.
You told us some time ago how to a couple of methods to figure the value of a stock. Would you repeat those for me?
Get your question to us now at 888-99-CHART. That's how to reach Invest Talk anytime.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. Great show as always. I have owned American Outdoor Brands, symbol AOBC, for quite a while. I bought it as a deep value play, and I have a steep loss in the position. Last quarter sales were disappointing, and a major competitor, Remington, filed for bankruptcy. Doesn't seem to be too much of a problem, and the forward PE looks about average. However, the noise around this stock is absolutely deafening. I was hoping for your opinion of this investment over the next 18 to 24 months, given the unpopularity of this sector. Thanks very much.
All right, he's looking at AOBC, American Outdoor Brands. This is the old Smith & Wesson. Manufactures firearms, revolvers, pistols, rifles, and their accessories, right? Ammunition, etc. Modest amount of debt, 54% debt-to-equity ratio. The biggest problem is their revenues are down 33% year over year. Earnings are down 86% year over year. And the whole sector is not doing so hot. It did very well during the Obama era because people thought that Obama was going to take everyone's guns. So there was high demand for firearms because everybody who wanted to buy a gun was worried that that option could be taken away at any moment. Once Obama was gone and Trump came aboard, obviously a Republican, an NRA, I guess, supporter, would you say, even though he's open to putting some limits on guns in some way, people became less excited or less anxious to buy guns. And that certainly has hurt their brand as well as competitors have hurt them. But it's a good company overall. Return equity is 42%, which is very, very profitable long term. It's trading at, let's see, operating earnings yield of about 9%, which is good. Like I said, modest debt, trading at 7x EBITDA. relatively cheap, especially because EBITDA is depressed right now. So I do think this is a deep value play. I like it over the next couple years. This is Invest Talk. Steve is going to be in San Jose next month on May 2nd. He set aside a full day to meet with listeners and review their portfolios in these informal 1.5 hour sessions. So to reserve your seat, go to investtalk.com.
Invest Talk continues a service of KPP Financial. To build a solid foundation for your retirement strategy, you need to confront risk. Take the 3-minute quiz, the Risk Analysis Quiz, on investtalk.com. It's free. Now's the time to bring your money question to the table. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Now let's talk a little bit about fixed income, and most people think of fixed income as what you need in retirement. And fixed income in general is thought of as low risk. But there are ways that you can lose money in the fixed income markets. So while they are lower risk than the equity markets in general, they aren't no risk either, especially if you don't do the proper research and study the current market. So what is fixed income? Fixed income is simply a type of investment that gives you systematic or consistent, steady income streams at regular intervals. Sometimes that's monthly, sometimes that is quarterly, sometimes that's semi-annually, maybe that's annually. But it's predictable. And that could be from dividends or interest income from low-risk securities or income of various types. It could be business income. It could be classified as that. Now, like I said, fixed income is typically for those who are retired, but it doesn't mean that you can't use fixed income for other goals as well, such as paying for your child's education or just simply growing your investments. Income-producing securities do compound your returns over time and offer you lower volatility, which for some people, they love. Now, what are the different types of fixed income securities? Well, there's corporate bonds, there's high grade, and then there's junk bonds as well. Obviously, junk bonds or high yield bonds, they tend to yield more, hence the name high yield, but they are also higher risk. So you never want to get too exposed to this market, especially late in the cycle like we are now, where the next downturn in the economy will usher in probably big losses for many junk bond investors. So always understand that any corporate bonds that you're investing in, that there is risk, and understand the risk you're taking by going out in the risk spectrum for lower quality, as well as how long of a exposure you have to maturities. And then second is, once again, locking your investments up longer term can allow you higher yield, which is positive. But if interest rates rise, you're going to be subject to losses if you need to liquidate any bond investments that have long-term time horizons. So you want to make sure that you have enough money for emergencies, short-term needs, and you don't have to liquidate some of those fixed income assets that might mature 8, 10, 15 years from now. And that's one reason why I think you need to learn to ladder your securities. That could be bonds, that could be CDs. They all have different maturity lengths, right? So laddering is simply having different maturities of different buckets of your money. So you might have one bond that matures in 2 years, another matures in 3, and then when that 2-year bond matures, you invested in another 2-year bond, and then you're every year you're rolling over another maturity. And that will allow you to capture more yield if interest rates rise, which we are in a rising interest rate environment, I think, for now and foreseeable future. Number four is don't limit yourself to just debt, right? Just bonds. Strong blue chip companies can offer you stable, steady yields, and many offer 3, 4, 5, 6% dividend yields, which are taxed at a very advantageous rate. And the price of the underlying security can grow as profits grow, as long as you're picking the right company. You can also invest in real estate or real estate investment trust. What you always want to have, though, in any real estate holding, at least real estate investment holding, is positive cash flow. And that's something I see a lot of people, they make a mistake of, oh, I'm going to have negative cash flow, I'm just building equity. That's not a great situation to be in, and you can always, even in this market, find positive cash flow investments. So you want to be patient to get that and make sure you're getting positive cash flow. And let's see, tips, treasury inflation protected securities. I think that's a good thing everybody should have in their fixed income portfolio, is something related that will keep up with inflation if inflation does take off. And then emerging market debt, that can be a great way to diversify your portfolio and your currency risk as well. Now, what's coming up on the next Invest Talk? 6 money topics that every couple should discuss. That will be one of the topics on tomorrow's Invest Talk on Thursday. We're here to answer your questions on any money topics. I want to hear from you. Call me now at 888-99-CHART.
If you're the kind of person who invests in their good health, doesn't it make sense that you should pay less for life insurance? The stats show it clearly. People who eat smart and exercise are 42% less likely to be obese, and they have a 50% lower hospitalization rate. So what's the return on investment for following a healthy lifestyle? Health IQ can save their customers up to a third on life insurance. That's it, up to 33%. That's a healthy return for any investment. InvestTalk is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/invest to see if you qualify. That's healthiq.com/invest. Or mention the promo code INVEST so they'll know you're an InvestTalk listener when you talk with a Health IQ agent. Now let's get back to the podcast. Now let's get back to Invest Talk. It's a two-way conversation. You can speak live with Justin or Steve if you call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And we're open to any money question. The number is 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Justin. This is Robert calling you from Pleasanton, California. Just wanted to see if I could get your take on the stock of Salesforce. The symbol is CRM. The company is obviously growing quickly, has a very high PE, so I suspect I know what your answer is going to be, but I'm wondering if perhaps you could provide a point at which you think it would be a good investment, a price that you might be comfortable with to start a position. Thanks so much. Look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast.
All right, he's looking at Salesforce.com, and this provides on-demand customer relationship management software, applications, and services to business. One of the first movers in the cloud space in bringing content management to the cloud and to everyone who works under a particular organization, and they're starting to roll out niche products. Certainly a well-run business. Revenue is growing about 24% year over year, and that's been consistent in the mid-20%, as well as earnings are going to go up 67% this year, 19% next year. Now, based on $2.70 a share, you're talking about a forward PE somewhere in the 50s. You know, that's tough for me to swallow for any company, but a company that's growing 25% or so a year, that's pretty darn good. It's hard for me to ignore that type of growth and the fact they're leaders and they're one of the strongest names and strongest brands, have strong technology. They understand how the industry works, and this industry is only going to grow. So I absolutely love the space. Now, is it cheap enough for me yet? Oh, that's so hard. You have an operating earnings yield of 0.26%. That is 0.26%. That's pretty low. Its enterprise value to EBITDA is 85. I like to see that like at 8.5. You know, you're always going to pay a premium for growth, a premium for a good company. But this is just a lot. I love that they don't have any debt. They're very cash flow positive. So I absolutely love the company. Do I love it at $124 a share? And like I said, 85 times enterprise value to EBITDA? I don't. I don't love it there. What am I willing to pay? Half that? Maybe 40? So $60 a share, $70 a share. I would suspect it's hard for even in a recession to get down quite that low. But to me, I would start a position if it gets back down into the low 80s. That's where I would say, okay, this is a stock that has enough value for me to pay $40 or 40 times EBITDA from an enterprise value perspective. So that's my figure. You know, you asked where I would buy it, where I would like to own it. $80 a share is something that I would consider it. Obviously, the growth trajectory would have to be relatively intact, and they'd still need to be the leader within the industry, which I think they still will be. That was CRMSalesforce.com. Now let's... I want to memorialize one of the great unsung value investors. Everyone talks about Benjamin Graham, Warren Buffett, etc. But Marty Whitman from Third Avenue Management died on Monday at the age of 93. And he was one of the great fund managers through the 80s and 90s. And he actually won Morningstar's Fund Manager of the Year in 1990, running Third Avenue Value. And I want to touch on him because he didn't do something that's a whole lot different than many value investors, including ourselves at KPP Financial. But I want to highlight kind of his methodology. And what he would do is rummage through distressed stocks, stocks that were down a lot, down in the dumps, and maybe on the brink of insolvency, meaning bankruptcy, such as Tesla. But many of Whitman's depressed stock plays eventually turned around for the better. And the reason is he found companies that were cheap and safe, and he held on to them to see them fulfill their potential from a value perspective. He would focus on a company's takeover value, meaning what would another company pay for the entire company, look for about a 50% discount. Now, he was a business accountant, and so what he would do is comb through the financial statements of these businesses that were beaten down to try to determine the real balance sheet value and make sure that the company's setbacks were not so bad that it ruined the business. You know, every company has its hard times, right? Every company goes through its ups and downs. But what value investing is finding the companies that are kind of down in the dumps, but understanding that there is still value with their brands, value with their business. And not only did he look for very cheap share price, but he also wanted companies to meet these three criteria, and these are very important. One is minimal amount of debt on its balance sheet. Any company that has excessive amounts of debt, that is a recipe for disaster. and can make their troubles even worse because they focus more on servicing that debt as opposed to running the business successfully, profitably, and sustainably. So that's number one. Number two is companies with high quality assets. What he's looking for is cash, real estate, things that were easy to understand the value of, right? Cash is obvious. Maybe securities of some type, whether that's bonds or equities. Those are easy to value. Real estate is relatively easy to value as well. Okay, where is this property? What other properties have recently sold just like it? And what is the approximate value of that real estate? And that's helpful as well. So high quality assets that are fairly easy to value. And then companies that don't require a ton of overhead to generate cash, generate profits. He would like money management firms because you kind of, you know, the business can be done online, via telephone, face-to-face meetings. That's not a whole lot of overhead. Whereas maybe a car company, which has a lot of equipment and a lot of overhead to build a car, is a lot harder to sustain a profitable business. So I wanted to highlight him and give you an idea of what a value investor looks like and what are important to him, think people like him, including myself. Let's go to Victor in New Jersey. How you doing, Victor?
Hey, Justin. Thank you for taking my call, and you have a very calming effect on me. Thank you so much for teaching us.
Well, I appreciate the call.
My question is on bonds. Now, I know there's corporate bonds and municipal bonds and government, U.S. government bonds. But then I don't know the difference between these bonds and if I should get into them. And also, I know some there's like a period of time you have to hold them. Hopefully you could answer this for me. I'm not really sure where to go for answers.
Okay. So you're just trying to figure out what the differences are between these different types of bonds.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, a corporate bond is debt issued by a company, right? And there's varying levels of quality from very strong companies like the Johnson & Johnson of the world that have high credit ratings to junk companies like the Teslas of the world that are in tough times and are have burning cash and have a lot of debt in their balance sheet and are, you know, close to bankruptcy. And then there's everywhere in between, right? And the lower quality you go, the higher yield you're going to get, okay? And that income is taxed at your ordinary income tax rate, unless it's held within a tax-deferred account like an IRA, 401k, et cetera, okay? Then you have government bonds and – say that again?
I said it would be in a 401k rollover.
Okay. Yeah, so these are things that we manage a lot at KPP. We manage 401k rollovers for many people who are looking for income. We have a program that invests in corporate bonds, and you know that income from that is just reinvested in new securities. And that is that's how corporate bonds work, right? Then there's the municipal bonds. Those are typically issued by state and local governments. It could be issued by the state as a whole, or from the state level government, or it could be local municipalities, the water district, or some other entity, maybe toll roads, right, that are being built in a particular area. And many times those are tax-free, both on the federal level and the state level, meaning you're not paying any income tax on that income. However, the yields tend to be very, very low and are mostly beneficial for people that are in very high tax brackets and held in taxable accounts. You never want to hold one of those in a tax-deferred account like a 401k or an IRA.
Oh, so that's bad.
Yeah. And then there's obviously government bonds where you're issued by the federal government, could be a government bond issued by a foreign government like Germany or Japan or China, etc. And those have different tax treatments as well and different risk levels, and have if it's a foreign government, there's some currency risk as well that needs to be considered. So that's kind of the rundown of the three main types of bonds that are out there. Does that clarify things a little bit more?
Yes. So to diversify my portfolio, I would want something with a higher yield then, correct?
Well, the highest yielding debt would be like a high yield corporate bond debt, but that in this late in the cycle is a very risky place to be. You're going to get a higher yield now, but there's defaults. You know, in a recession, a lot of those companies default. Some of them lose 30, 40, 50, 60% of their value, the bonds, right? And an index of them could lose 20, 30% of your value, right? So, you know, there's that balance between how much more yield you want to get versus how much risk you're going to take, okay? So what is your risk tolerance is a big question. Okay,
all
Victor?
Right. Now, are all bonds, are they all, like I always hear like on CNBC and stuff, they talk about a 30-year bond. Are they all, mm-hmm. do you have to hold them for like 30 years?
No. Most bonds are marketable, meaning that you can go out there and sell them in the open market. Some are more liquid than others. Like if you're owning treasury bonds, those can be very, very liquid. And the spread or maybe the loss that you're going to take on selling them is going to be very, very low. Whereas if you go out to like a corporate, low grade, meaning a junk bond that's maybe close to bankruptcy, and you want to go sell that, you're going to have to probably take a steep discount because the spread is going to be very wide to go out and sell that particular bond, right? And so it's all about how much loss you're willing to take, and each different bond in the marketplace has different levels of liquidity. And so it's not that you have to hold it until maturity, but the longer you go out, so say you bought a 30-year treasury bond, if interest rates rise dramatically, the value of that bond is going to drop dramatically because it has high what is called duration risk, interest rate risk, meaning if bonds suddenly bond yields go from 2%, say on their, it's called 3% on the 10-year today, to 10% in a year, the value of the bonds that were yielding 3% before are going to be worth a lot less, okay? So you're going to take big losses on that, okay? So understand that not only is there credit risk, but there's duration risk as well, that if you did want to sell the bond in between then you would take some sort of loss. Now, what we do for clients is we ladder the bonds out. We buy, say a client has $1 million, half of that goes into bonds, and maybe $10,000 each is going to go to different bonds that mature at different times. And so throughout the future, there's going to be different maturities, and the bond will be, that money will be reinvested at hopefully higher rates. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So to get into one bond, wouldn't work as well as being in multiple bonds.
Well, like that depends on your goal. Depends on how much.
Mm-hmm. If I wanted to invest $50,000, let's say in with J&J, well, okay, that wouldn't be, from what you said, I shouldn't just put the $50,000 in J&J. I should break it up into different companies so they're maturing at different times. Well,
yeah, if you want to diversify not only your credit risk, because while J&J is very unlikely to go bankrupt, they certainly could at some point in the future. So if you want to diversify that credit risk as well as the duration risk, meaning you're going to buy different bonds at different maturities, then you would want to break that up. If you're comfortable with J&J and the yield and that maturity date, then there's nothing wrong with, you know, buying just J&J bonds. Thanks for the call. Hope that clarified it. We're going to get to Nick in Hayward next, and then you. I want to hear from you. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Let's get back to your calls on Invest Talk for this Wednesday, April 18th. It can often be a difficult topic, uncomfortable at times, but addressing money management is also very necessary. 6 money topics that every couple should discuss. That's next time. Do you have a question for Justin right now? 888-99-CHART is how to reach him on Invest Talk.
Let's go to Nick in Hayward. How you doing, Nick?
Hi, how are you, Justin? Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
I'm thinking about buying some Facebook, and I want to get your opinion as to what might be a pretty good price to get into.
Well, Facebook's definitely a tough one. The business has been fantastic. They made a penny a share in 2012, and next year they're supposed to make $8.75 a share. So the growth has been absolutely tremendous. The business performance has been tremendous. I just worry a lot about the recent problems, the testifying in front of Congress, the controversy, and I think people are starting to wake up to the amount of data that they're giving to Facebook, and the amount of data that they collect, I think, is likely to be limited to some degree by regulation in the coming couple of years. And so I think there is a lot of potential downside if the regulation is too strict, and that could change the way their business operates, and even Mark Zuckerberg has talked about trying to get people to use Facebook less, which is pretty interesting, and actually young people don't really use Facebook at all, and that's a big worry because those are the future users of the platform. Now, I think their biggest saving grace is Instagram, which remains very sticky, very people are very engaged, even young people. And so I think that's a big saving grace for them. So, you know, it's actually not an expensive stock. You know, forward PE is only about 19, 20, which for a company is growing revenues 47%. That's not that crazy. But I would just worry that the regulation that's coming is going to change their business dramatically, and how that affects earnings, and it's a crowded trade, could potentially push the stock down much, much more.
So would you say buy some of it and then wait for another drop in the price and pick up some more maybe?
Well, to me, I'm looking for technicals. It's now started a downtrend. This recent rally is nice, but it hasn't gotten above its breakdown level, which is kind of around the one. It's almost near it, right? The 173, 172 number is where the major indexes are converging. You're now seeing the 50-day cross below the 200-day moving average, which is a negative sign. So technically, it looks weak. Like I said, it's not that expensive, but there's a lot of overhang of potential regulation that could definitely change the business dramatically. So I would have to me, this is all about the technicals. And the technicals are going to tell me a lot about how the regulation is going to unfold over the next few years and how that's going to affect the business. So this is a very, very difficult one to call. And I just don't have a lot of confidence either way to give you a recommendation.
Justin, do you have a time to explain enterprise value of a given company?
Sure. So when many people talk on TV about what the value of a company is, typically they're talking about the market cap. And the market cap of a company is how many shares are outstanding times the price, right? So if it's a $50 share price and there's 100 million shares outstanding, then that's a $5 billion company, right? $5 billion.
Yeah.
Now, right. If they have a lot, and that's if you want to own the whole business. But if you want to not only own the whole business, but have the right to everything, every asset it has, and get rid of all the debt that it might have, that is what is the enterprise value. So saying, okay, I want to, how much is it going to cost to not only buy the equity of the company, but pay off all the debt as well? That is the enterprise value, and that is something that has been ignored, right? Everyone talks about market cap, but a lot of these companies are adding debt and buying back their shares, making the stock price go up, so enterprise value overall gets very, very expensive. And so it's a combination of the market cap as well as the net debt on its balance sheet. I hope that helps. Time to end the hour. A reminder, Steve has a new date for portfolio reviews that's coming up in San Jose, California on Wednesday, May 2nd. To reserve your hour with Steve, just go to investtalk.com. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Steve Peasley and I thank you for making us a part of your day. Let's meet here again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.